Part 4. Escaping the Labyrinth. Amandal, Ildan, Vaem, Felinia, Calamir, Morjadayan, Fench, Edara. 33. New Dilemmas.
At last we come to my favorite conjuration. No other beast can match them in strength or grandeur. Enter the Gangolin.
From Colvinar Vryum's Bestiary for Conjurers, page 247. Felinia, her friends, and what remained of Amandal's conjurations were the last to cross the vast oval room on Tardalim's 33rd floor. Those strange reliefs along the walls made her think of stories her father had told her as a child, the Dragon Wars. She turned from the reliefs, eyeing the strange obsidian statues hovering in the air. The clear sphere between them pulsed with yellow light as the expedition passed between the statues.
"The camp isn't too far," Ildan said, pointing to a staircase. "Miradin had us set up in a nearby field."
"A field?"
Morjadayan asked, raising his eyebrow. Ildan nodded.
"The roost isn't like the rest of Tardalim," Sylas said. "It's actually quite pretty."
Intrigued, Felinia opened her mouth to speak, but a horrified cry echoed in her mind.
Amandal.
Since enthralling him, she had pushed aside vivid and terrifying images, as well as deranged thoughts that would have been screamed aloud if Amandal were not enthralled.
"It's okay," she sent the thought to Amandal. "You're safe."
Though he was walking calmly, she could feel that Amandal wanted to run. He wanted to clutch his head and wail.
"Oh, Amandal."
Her whispered lament drew the attention of the others, and they all stopped short of the statues.
"I can take over," Ildan said, worry contorting his face.
His thin lips quivered as tears filled his eyes. Felinia shook her head and pressed forward.
"No."
She wiped her eyes and headed for the staircase leading to the roost. Her friends trailed behind her, talking about the 33rd floor. Morjadayan asked about a pair of hallways beside the stairs, and Ildan said the Tevis rolls were hidden there. Dougal was intrigued.
"None of that matters,"
Felinia thought. She drew Amandal to her and grabbed his hand. She was halfway up the stairs before she lifted her eyes to the vast space that was the Tulidine roost.
"Oh my,"
she murmured. The roost was larger than any space or cavern she had ever beheld. It was beautiful, as Sylas had claimed, teeming with all sorts of strange and colorful flora. Morjadayan and Dougal reacted with similar awe, speculating about its size. Ildan chimed in, talking about how one could walk on the walls and ceiling.
"On the walls and ceiling?"
Felinia started, but immediately recalled her observations while ascending to the third floor. The bits of her illusion that she had placed throughout the second floor had been above her. Had the expedition been going into Tardalim's center when they thought they were actually ascending to higher levels? If so, this roost would be at the very heart of Tardalim, its core. The thought made her woozy. She staggered from the top step and stumbled onto lush, dark teal grass. She sucked in her breath while the others walked around her.
"It's this way," Ildan said.
The rapid beating of wings whirled around Felinia. A flash of gray zipped by, and that winged creature came to a halt, hovering near Ildan. Its dark-colored wings were a blur, and its tail swayed.
"What was its name?"
Strange words echoed in her mind, coming from Amandal.
"There you are, Finch," Sylas said.
The winged thing nodded and fluttered toward Amandal, studying the conjurer.
"Why did you run?" Ildan asked.
Finch blinked several times and turned to the illusionist.
"What is run?"
The question was high-pitched and nasally. Sylas giggled, and Ildan ran a hand through his blonde hair.
"Well, it doesn't have any legs," Dougal said matter-of-factly.
Morjadayan gave the transmuter a sidelong glance but turned back to Fench.
"It means to flee."
Finch blinked again and rubbed his trunk, looking back to Amandal as if expecting an answer.
What a strange-looking creature,
Balenia thought. Ilden cleared his throat.
Back to my question. Why did you flee?
I was scared,
Finch said. He hung his head and his trunk became limp.
I don't like the Orath monster.
You poor thing,
Silas said, reaching for the winged creature.
Now look what you did, Ilden. He's scared.
Ilden shrugged.
Come here, Finch.
Silas patted her shoulder.
You can sit here.
Finch fluttered toward her and perched, draping his tail along Silas's chest. The creature's wings stilled, revealing a beautiful pattern of spots.
Orath monster? Morjadian asked. Is that its name?
Finch nodded.
Orath something. I can't remember. My mother said its name only a few times. The invaders let it out.
Let it out? Had the monster been trapped like those strange creatures in the crystal cylinders? Was it one of the prisoners? Ilden asked, and Finch nodded. The winged creature leaned toward Silas's head, and she reached up to comfort him. The six friends stood in silence for a moment until Felinia spoke.
We should get Amandal to the tent. I'm leaving the Yeltis here.
Ilden nodded and sent the Cistern to join the hulking beast. Once the conjurations were together, Ilden hurried around a stone railing enclosing the stairwell. Felinia followed, with the others trailing behind. They soon neared a cluster of tents within a large field of that dark teal grass. Many of the survivors from Felinia's part of the expedition were gathered on the far side of the camp. While they picked their way through the tents, a savory aroma, like that of a hearty stew, tingled in her nostrils. It made her stomach growl.
Oh, I need to eat,
Dougal exclaimed and loped off toward the tantalizing aroma.
Will you grab me some, too?
Morjadian called after him. If Dougal replied, it wasn't with words. Once at Amandal and Ilden's tent, Ilden rushed to open his canvas flap. Felinia hurried inside, with Amandal trailing behind her.
Which cot is his?
She asked, and Ilden pointed to one beside the door. Through her enthralling bond, Felinia guided Amandal into the tent. She eased him toward the cot.
Lie down,
she urged, and he obeyed. Though he lay calmly, the terror continued to rage in his mind. Felinia closed her eyes and brought a hand to her forehead.
Is it still bad?
Silas asked as she entered the tent. Finch was still perched atop her shoulder. Felinia nodded. Ilden slipped past her and knelt beside Amandal. Morjadian entered the tent, and Silas edged toward the cot, making room for him. Looking frustrated, the burly barginist set his jaw and folded his arms.
There has to be something we can do,
Ilden said, balling his hands into fists.
What's wrong?
Finch asked. Ilden cocked his head toward the winged creature.
He was engulfed by that monster's orange haze. Do you know anything about it?
Finch shook his head so quickly his trunk swung back and forth, nearly slapping Silas across the face. Guarding against the flailing trunk, Silas looked to Ilden.
I could try healing him again.
Ilden nodded, then turned back to Amandal. Felinia watched as a green aura surrounded Silas. The Arpran light surged toward the conjurer, coalescing around his head. Felinia could feel the rejuvenating magic coursing through Amandal. The Arpran particles seeped through his skull, but something prevented them from moving farther.
It's worse than before, Silas muttered.
She sighed, and the green aura faded from Amandal.
Perhaps the sickness will run its course?
Morjadian asked. Ilden shook his head, muttering something Felinia couldn't hear. They stood in silence for a while until Dougal arrived. The transmuter awkwardly carried three bowls.
I got some for you, too,
he said to Felinia. She gave him a weak smile and accepted the stew.
How is he?
Dougal asked.
Not good,
Morjadian said, shaking his head.
Not good.
What do we do?
Felinia wondered, raising a spoonful to her lips.
While she ate, Amandel continued to struggle against her enthralling bond. His terror stung her heart, and tears once again filled her eyes. She turned away and a tear trickled down her cheek.
"What about the Tevisrals?"
Dougal asked. "Maybe there's something in that treasure trove that could cure him. On our descent through the caves, I overheard the soldiers discussing a conversation between the commander and Bayam about a Tevisral that could save those impaled by the Yeltis. If there are Tevisrals that could do that, perhaps one can help Amandel."
"Hmm," Mortadian said. "It's worth a shot. Do you know what it looks like?"
Dougal shook his head. The talk of Tevisrals made Sylas grunt.
"What can a Tevisral do that I can't?"
While they discussed their dilemma, Amandal's terror intensified. Felinia flinched and nearly dropped her bowl, spilling part of the stew.
"I need to do something," she thought.
She couldn't bear Amandal's suffering any longer.
"I'm putting him to sleep,"
she said, and began uttering an incantation. Pale gray light coalesced around her, but soon zipped toward Amandal. Felinia felt the magic penetrate his skin, but it stopped short of reaching his skull. It was blocked, like Silas's magic.
"It didn't work," Ilden muttered, and turned to Finch.
Defeated, Felinia wobbled toward Ilden's cot. She struggled to hold a firm composure, but Amandal's terror had eroded whatever emotional resolve she'd once had. Though his plans for vengeance were frustrated, Captain Idara was still determined to avenge his beloved. He sat upon his cot within the small tent he shared with Clubis, scraping his knife across the small Yeltis tusk. "This better work," he grumbled to himself. The encrusted venom turned to an amber powder that fell into a pouch barely the size of his fist. Since ascending the labyrinth, Idara had reconsidered finding an inconspicuous Tevisral. His sailors were among the first to enter the treasure trove beneath this roost, but to his dismay, none of the Tevisrals that had been found were deadly. Well, besides the ones that transformed into weapons. Unfortunately, those remarkable tools of war were not inconspicuous. And what weapons they did discover were confiscated for the damned Mages Guild.
What do they need weapons for?
True, the weapons were magical in nature. Swords and finisars, whose blades formed from light and burst with all sorts of magic. Bows, whose strings wove out of thin air, and arrows that appeared within quivers. But what use had a mage for such things? To make matters worse, the other Tevisrals that were discovered baffled the scholars who had come along, and the damned fools were reluctant to tinker with them. All they wanted to do was sort them by size and shape.
Idiots.
Frustrated, Idara returned to the venom as his mode of vengeance. After his first search of the treasure trove, Idara had a dream about serving warm tea to the murderous bastard and the heartless whore. As they took their first sips, both convulsed like those who were impaled by the Yeltis. Though it was not directly expressed in the dream, Idara knew the tea was laced with the venom. So, after failing to find a suitable and discreet weapon a second time, he sent his crew to the farther reaches of the treasure trove while he retired to his tent. After all, ideas that came during one's dreams were inspired, weren't they? Poisoning would not be as pleasurable as stabbing, but Idara could enjoy watching his enemies writhe on the ground, as long as they survived the labyrinth's perils.
"Death best not cheat me of my vengeance."
A loud commotion of triumphant shouts carried through the quiet camp, and Idara ceased whittling. He craned his neck toward the tent's walls, but couldn't make sense of what he heard. He shoved his knife into the dark teal grass, wrapped the broken tusk in the torn fabric from his pocket, and then tied the pouch holding the amber venom. Once his things were tucked away, Idara hurried to the tent door, but before he could open it, Clubis stumbled inside. His first mate's jaw was set, his eyes fierce.
"Oh, Captain, they've returned."
Intrigued, Idara pushed past Clubis and stepped outside. The noises of various conversations carried from the field that was the makeshift mess area. A crowd had gathered, made of mage and mercenary alike. they surrounded soldiers and Adara's enemies. But the heartless whore led the murderous bastard from the crowd as if he were leashed. The Mandalorian lieutenant was with them as well, and the three of them soon disappeared among the tents. "Where are you going?" Adara stroked his long beard. "Seems they lost a lot of people," Clovis said, coming beside Adara. "Only half of them survived, or so I heard." Adara nodded and stepped back into the tent. Clovis was quick to secure the tent flap. Together they returned to Adara's cot and sat.
"Thinned ranks should make our revenge easier," Adara whispered.
Clovis rubbed his hands together, nodding. "Now all that is left is for you to finish." Adara chuckled, then pulled his knife from the grass, eyeing the amber residue sprinkling the blade.
"Soon our beloved will be avenged."
Ilden's frustration grew, stoked by Felinia's sobs.
"Oh, my friend,"
he fought back a scowl while turning to Finch. "Is there any food here that can put Amandal to sleep?" The winged creature rubbed his trunk and then pushed off Silas's shoulder. He flew out of the tent without a word.
"Hopefully that's a yes," Ilden thought, turning back to his friend.
Amandal lay motionless, staring at the tent's fabric ceiling.
"What about a dispel?" Dougal asked. "If we can dispel the haze, perhaps Silas can heal him."
"That might work," Morjadayan said. "I'll hold him down with a barjan."
He began uttering an incantation and the tent walls glowed with blue light. Soon, an inverted layer of barjan spread across Amandal, wrapping around him and the cot. Ilden sucked in his breath.
"Here goes nothing."
White light shone around him as he uttered the incantation. Once the dispel formed, he flung it at Amandal's face, focusing the magic to surge only through the conjurer's head. But it only dismissed part of Felinia's bond.
"How was that possible?"
"It didn't work?"
Dougal asked. Ilden shook his head.
"This is ridiculous,"
Morjadayan muttered. Dougal and Silas speculated on Amandal's condition while Ilden slumped in defeat.
"I wonder if Felinia can relinquish her hold."
Felinia was still sobbing. Amandal's terror was probably too much for her.
"I have him restrained," Morjadayan said to Felinia. "You can relinquish your magic."
"He'll just scream," she said between sobs. "It'll be worse."
Ilden sucked in his breath and studied the conjurer once again.
"What happened to you, Amandal?"
The others continued talking, but Ilden ignored them.
"I wonder what that voice would say."
He looked to the tent's ceiling.
"I don't suppose you'll talk to me, will you?"
He heard nothing besides his friends and their speculations. Dougal wanted to go search the Tebas rolls they had found.
"Hopefully Finch will return soon."
If they couldn't free Amandal from his madness, perhaps they could at least help him sleep. The conversations of the survivors faded as Vaym hurried through the odd structures of Tardalim's core.
"Such strange things," she thought.
But tree-like dwellings did make sense for winged creatures. Prior to leaving for Sauroth, Vaym had tried researching the Tuladyne, but the Hillanard was rather lacking in information about them. The creatures had once lived across Kaldah, but had vanished several millennia ago, after Lord Chesareth's exile. What knowledge remained of them was merely myth.
"And now they will be myth," she thought,
quickening her pace.
"An extinct race."
Kaidel called for her, and Vaym glanced over her shoulder. "Do you know where you're going?" the lieutenant asked.
"The man claimed the tower was this direction,"
Vaym said, pointing between two tree-like buildings.
"I'm sure we'll see it."
She increased her speed, jogging briskly.
"Why are we hurrying?"
Kalamir asked from beside her.
"Isn't this far enough away? I need you, Vaym."
"Patience,"
she said to him.
He kept pace with her, his eyes filled with lustful yearning.
I need to find a way to preoccupy him, she thought. Perhaps I was too hasty about enthralling him.
But what other choice had she? If she had not used the euphoronizer on Kalamir, the commander would have beaten her, perhaps even killed her. Using the Tevisrol had proved convenient in avoiding further conflict, but Kalamir's relentless attempts to bed her were growing tiresome. Normally, she enjoyed such attention. After all, that was the euphoronizer's sole purpose. But Kalamir had been rather dull and unsatisfying.
I've been meaning to ask, Kaidal said, now running alongside Vaim. How did you do it? Change him, I mean.
Vaim gave the lieutenant a sidelong glance as they rounded a building. Did she dare answer? Vaim had kept the euphoronizer a secret for many years, but now someone had witnessed its effects.
A Tevisrol, she said curtly.
That's it, Kaidal laughed. Nothing more.
Vaim raised an eyebrow, but kept her focus ahead. She did not want to say any more about it. The euphoronizer was one of a kind, a precious Tevisrol she had created and kept to herself.
I've never heard of such a device, Kaidal said. Is it like the ancient mind circlets?
Vaim shook her head, hoping to deter the lieutenant with an unspoken lie. The euphoronizer was derived from a mind circlet, although it was not as powerful. Mind circlets could destroy and rebuild one's identity like the gaze of a god. Several years ago, the scholars at the Hillenard had tried replicating an ancient mind circlet, but failed. Their failure, however, inadvertently laid the groundwork for developing the euphoronizer's primary mechanism. Vaim had been among those who made the discovery. Then she secretly conducted her own research on it. When her colleagues abandoned the project, Vaim continued her work and eventually created the euphoronizer.
So, did you make it? Kaidal asked.
Vaim didn't reply.
Why does she have to be so inquisitive?
Your secret is safe with me, Vaim.
Why not there?
Kalamir shouted, tugging at Vaim's arm and pointing to a seemingly private spot between two of the buildings.
It's quiet. No one will hear.
She shook her arm loose and kept running.
I said be patient. Do not ask me again.
The commander obeyed, but the strained expression on his face showed the struggle between his swelling urges and Vaim's command. Kaidal laughed again.
My, I would love to have one of those, she said amid her mirth. Oh, to have a man fawning over you, obeying your every command.
Tell me, how long does it last?
Long enough, Vaim said through clenched teeth.
I see,
Kaidal nodded, directing her gaze to Vaim's hand.
Is it the glove, or are you hiding the Tevisrol in it?
Vaim ignored the question, although the lieutenant continued pestering her. But no matter how hard Kaidal pried, Vaim would never divulge anything about the euphoronizer. She had used it in secret for many years for her pleasures, and she was not about to change that. Soon, a towering structure, partly covered in fluorescent vines and violet moss, appeared above the tree-like buildings. Its top was partially surrounded by a blue aura.
There it is, Vaim thought, triumphant.
She quickened her pace to a sprint, and the others followed. After they rounded several of the tree buildings, the rest of the tower came into view. It consisted of 7 tiers, each covered in overgrowth, and rose 21 stories. A good number. The blue aura, however, was actually a glowing sphere hovering beside the tower's top.
The living diagram of Tardalim,
Vaim thought, recalling the explanation mentioned on their way to the roost. The idea of seeing Tardalim's workings through a projection of light was intriguing. Vaim led the others around the building until she spotted a clearing in the vines and moss. The white stone within the cleared area consisted of shallow grooves resembling the round doors all along Tardalim's halls.
Well, I suppose this is the entrance, Kaidal said. How do we open it?
Green light shone within the shallow grooves, and then the stone within the light slid apart.
Voice activated, Vayam thought, smiling. Keyed to the common tongue, no doubt.
She stepped ahead of the others into a well-lit corridor whose architecture was very similar to the rest of Tardalim's halls. As she continued down the hall, she removed a tall cylindrical case from her pack, the same one that held the map of Abadal. Ever careful, she twisted its lid and removed several rolled sheets of paper.
"Hold these," she said, handing the sheets to Keidel.
The lieutenant obeyed, and Vayam returned the case to her pack. With her hands free, Vayam turned back for the pages, but Keidel was not beside her. The lieutenant stood a dozen paces away and was too busy reading to notice the gesture.
"I don't understand," Keidel mumbled as Vayam approached. How could the Emperor have known?"
Vayam snatched the sheets and Keidel flinched.
"Come,"
she said, moving back down the hall. All the while, Keidel muttered to herself about the page's contents.
"It seems Vidar didn't inform her," the thought made Vayam smile.
Unlike Keidel, when Vayam first read those pages, she had been intrigued. The sheets contained detailed information that she assumed was known only to the Tulidyne, specific instructions of how to operate and access the various terminals inside Tardalim, including the sequences of characters to access the prison's innermost workings. The Emperor never explained exactly how he had obtained the information, but Vayam assumed he had received a manifestation of the Will, the means by which Lord Chesareth communed with his most devout followers. The hallway emptied into a seven-sided room with doors on each wall, all lit with a pale green hue. There were six doors total, numbered from 2 to 7, even to the right and odd to the left. This particular chamber had been documented in the pages Vayam carried. According to the instructions, each door led to lift-like chambers that rose to the tower's various tiers. Each doorway had the words in the divine tongue inscribed upon and around them. They were labeled with their tier's number and purpose. To the right, 2, structural workings, 4, records and manifests, 6, offices and communications. On the left, 3, defense network, 5, containment, 7, security and surveillance.
"There," Vayam said, pointing to her immediate left. "We should disable the shift before we do anything else."